This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Welcome to the American Monetary Association's podcast, where we explore how monetary policy impacts the real lives of real people and the action steps necessary to preserve wealth and enhance one's lifestyle.
It's my pleasure to welcome back a great guest. We had him on the show a while ago, and it's Mr. Dan Millman. You probably know his name, and you probably know his work. He's the author of 17 books, I believe, now, and he's out with a new one called The Four Purposes of Life, Finding Meaning and Direction in a Changing World. He's probably most well-known for the awesome book, The Way of the Peaceful Warrior, a book that changes lives, The Creative Compass, Writing Your Way from Inspiration to Publication, so he helps authors too. He's a former director of gymnastics at Stanford University, and I got to make one comment before we start with Dan and hear about his latest work. You always hear the constant refrain of the intellectual snobs out there who say, whenever a book is turned into a movie, well, the book was better. Actually, the book and the movie of The Way of the Peaceful Warrior are both fantastic. That's a rarity. But Dan, welcome. How are you?
Oh, doing great. Glad to be here with you.
Good to have you. And you have moved since we talked to you last. You are now in the very hip and trendy Brooklyn, New York, huh?
I have moved, Jason, and we moved for three reasons, two daughters and a grandbaby.
Well, it wasn't the weather, huh?
we like the cold. The four seasons are fine. We have to be in California all those years. We do enjoy running through the snow, that sort of thing.
Good stuff, good stuff. Well, hey, tell us about your latest work, The Four Purposes of Life.
Well, every one of my books has to justify itself. I've never written a book just to have another book out. After Way of the Peaceful Warrior was published way back in 1980, it started taking off by word of mouth over time, but I didn't write another book for 10 years. I felt I'd said what I have to say, which I think is kind of refreshing. But around 1989, in the late 80s, I met a rather unusual mentor, was exposed to a lot of new, very exciting information, perspectives on living. So I started writing, and after that, about a book a year. So it culminated most recently with The Four Purposes of Life, because it puts my work into context. It's a small book, about 150 pages, but it's packed with information to clarify where people are, to crystallize their life, to help them understand themselves and where they're going better.
Interesting. So you say in a changing world, I mean, we certainly all feel that pressure of the world changing so quickly. What did you mean by that when you made that the subtitle of the book?
Yeah, when I wrote my first, 30 years ago, I gave my first talk in Southern California. And even then I said, you know, it's hard to predict anything accurately these days because the variables are so many we don't know about or can foresee. But I said, one thing seems to be happening. This was 30 years ago. I said, the pace seems to be accelerating. The energy is building. And I had no idea where it would go. This is before the internet, before apps, before phone, you know, smartphones. But the pace is definitely increasing. And, you know, this whole idea of disruption, of staying a pace with technology and the news, the daily news, whether it's economic, changes happening so fast, the workplace. So to help people ground out and take a deep breath and say, okay, what is my life right now? What do I need to do? In fact, let me just say what these four purposes are so people get a sense.
Because Right. That's a great place to start. Yeah, okay.
The book, Jason, is like, it sounds like hubris because I didn't say four purposes of life. I wrote a book titled The Four Purposes of Life. You know, and a friend of mine said to me, Dan, I know the purpose of life. It's learning to love. Whatever the question, love is the answer. You know, I couldn't argue with that. It sounds like a great purpose in life. Another friend said, well, wait a minute, we're here to, reproduce and keep the species going. Another friend said, no, we're here for enlightenment, for awakening. Everybody has a different idea of what the big cosmic purposes are of life. But just as we divide the points on a compass into four primary directions and the days of the year into four primary seasons, by looking at our lives through these four purposes, it does give a sense of meaning, purpose, connection in terms of connecting our life with the bigger picture. And those four purposes are, first, learning life's lessons. The second one is finding our career and calling and understanding the difference between the two. The third purpose is more mysterious, and it's intriguing, believe me. It's called finding our life path, which is different from the career or calling. And the fourth purpose, maybe the most important one of all, which is attending to our purpose in this arising moment. And so that summarizes what those four purposes are. There's a tremendous amount behind each of those summaries.
Yeah, we'll get into those. I'm particularly intrigued, like you said, by attending to the moment, because when I had you on the show last, you said, you kind of summed it up as the one overriding theme of your work. I remember very well what you said, although I am not a good practitioner of this. But what you said, and I'll remind you, Dan, you probably know, but it was, be here now. That's what you said. And that concept of presence is a big theme in your work. You know, maybe before you go into these different purposes, do you want to just address that one maybe even more generally than you did specifically in the book? Because I think in what you just said, you're alluding to that as again.
Well, I am. And of course, I don't know anybody who is on, at least in the developed world, who reads, who hasn't heard or read many times about living in the present, that it's good to do. I mean, certainly it's not fresh with me. Eckhart Tolle restated it in his book. Ram Dass wrote the book Be Here Now. Robert Frost, the poet, talked about it. It's not a new idea. Epictetus, Marcus Aurelius, it's been around a long time. But what does it really mean? Now, today, this term mindfulness has become very popular. Everybody is mindfulness this, mindfulness that.
It's popular because nobody's doing it.
aren't doing it consciously. Look, all mindfulness means essentially three things: paying attention. The second thing is to the present moment. It's not about paying attention to the past or future, memory or imagination. It's right now, what's in front of us. And the third thing is without judgment. It's just noticing, being aware. So they have mindfulness meditation where you do that formally, while you sit with your eyes closed or half open. But in everyday life, just being mindful of the present moment. So when I talk about attending to your purpose, it's not just about the stock phrase, live in the present. It's about, what is your purpose in this present moment? You know, we may not all know what our cosmic purpose is, but you and I know our purpose right now. It's sharing with each other. It's talking, having a conversation. It's very clear. Most of us, with all the concepts around, can come back right now, here and now, but what needs doing right now? What is my purpose? And the quality of our moments, as I said, end up being the quality of our lives, because the better attention we pay to each arising moment and noticing what's going on and doing it purposefully, the better the quality of our life turns out to be. Robert Byrne once said, the purpose of life is a life of purpose. So it's not just about being in the present. That sounds abstract. How do you do that? But it's part of it is recognizing that there is no such thing actually in reality as the past or future. The future never comes. Tomorrow never comes. It's always tomorrow. And the past is only a set of neural impulses we call memory. But it's not here anymore. So most of us, Mark Twain once said, I've had many troubles in my life, most of which never happened.
although it's just the worry, thinking about how they might happen, right?
Yeah, thinking about past and future. But in the moment, we just address what we need to in the moment. So that's what the fourth purpose, it brings us back. It helps, again, it helps pull us out of the concepts and all the things we have to remember and do, and simplifies our life immeasurably. See, my life is quite busy, but it's very simple because I've recognized finally I can only do one thing at a time, really. And I know many young people, millennials, say, I'm a good multitasker. But that's somewhat of an illusion. It's been proven. It's been shown in almost every case because attention is a zero-sum game. We have so much attention for this moment. If we're paying attention to walking, then we're paying attention to walking. If we're paying attention to chewing gum, we're paying attention to chewing gum. But that old joke is true. You really can't walk and chew gum at the same time. You're attending to one or the other. Have you ever talked with someone on the phone and you know they're doing their email at the same time?
Yeah, most everybody's multitasking in one way or another nowadays.
But you can tell their quality of attention isn't really there. It's like, oh yeah, wow, really, So they're not fully with you. So people who think they multitask are just splitting their attention into various ways. And some people drive like that. It's a little scary, you know?
Okay, so first of all, I want to ask you a question about that, but I also want to share a quote that I just love about this. And you quoted a lot of great people. You didn't quote Og Mandino, though, and I bet you're a fan of his. He was one of the other greats, along with Dan Millman. And he says, "I will live as all good actors do when they are on stage, only in the moment. I cannot perform at my best today by regretting my previous act's mistakes or worrying about the scene to come." And, you know, that's like a great actor. You know, they're there. They're in the now. You know, you can just tell. And it's something you could never sort of academically quantify, I guess, but we just know it. You just know. Great acting versus mediocre acting is...
Yeah.
Maybe you couldn't quantify it, but you just know. And we all have experienced that, certainly. But come on, you know, when we drive, we're in an alpha state. You know, a lot of people, I've been guilty, certainly, of driving around for many years listening to your audiobooks and those of many other greats. Is that bad? I mean, I don't think that deteriorates from the quality of my driving. Certainly, I think texting and driving does. That's very dangerous. I mean, aren't we always walking and chewing gum? You know, we're always doing multiple things, right?
And, you know, we can walk and chew gum, obviously, and we can drive while listening to the radio or a book on tape. I do the same thing. Even when I go for bike rides through Prospect Park, often I'll listen with a earphone in one of my ears and listen to that way I get to travel with different people. By the way, that was a great quote you read by Og Mandino. I really enjoyed that. And the metaphor of acting is wonderful because it's a transcendental art. Life is an improvisation. And the more we, the better actors we are playing different roles as we need them, the better our life goes. So I think it was very appropriate you're raising that. But yeah, of course, nobody's saying just completely have tunnel vision. There are times somebody is speaking with us, but the more we bring attention, quality of attention and presence to what we do, the better. By the way, you mentioned acting, and there's a great story about Sir Laurence Olivier. He did this masterful performance, got a standing ovation, and he went into his dressing room, slammed the door, and someone knocked on his door and said, "Larry, what are you upset? That was the greatest performance I've ever seen you do." And he said, "Yes, and I don't know how I did it." So as you say, there's no trail of breadcrumbs. Sometimes we bring a lot of presence. If we play golf, some people can see the line to the hole to the one putting. Other times it's all fuzzy. So these things do come and go.
Okay, let's go into the different four purposes if we could. I didn't want to get too off on that tangent because I want the audience to hear about the new book specifically. What are these four purposes? Well, you told us what they were, but like drill down on them if you would.
Now, learning life's lessons sounds kind of mundane. Oh yes, we're all here to learn from our life experience. Turns out there's a lot more to it. In terms of Earth is a school, daily life is our classroom. You know, no one needs to read my books or any books or attend any seminars in order to evolve as a human being. People were evolving before books and seminars. So what then people ask me, well, why do you write books, Dan, and teach seminars? Because any good information, good perspectives that I share can help people learn the lessons of life a little more gracefully with a little less pain, because it helps clarify the lessons of life. But that's why learning life's lessons is so important. In fact, there are 12 courses we need to pass in order to graduate, and I summarize all those 12 courses in that first chapter. There are also school rules. If life is a school, there are rules in any school, and we call them universal laws. So I summarize what that is about. So it's really packed with an understanding that it's impossible to fail at anything if we've learned from it. Learning is not just the icing on the cake, it's the whole cake. That if we start to appreciate, what have I learned today? How have I changed? How do you know if you've learned something? This is an important question. People say, I learn things all the time. There are two ways to know if you've learned something. The primary way is an action changes. Something changes. The second way is your perspectives expand. And, you know, people have said to me, oh, your first book changed my life, Dan, you know, The Way of the Peaceful Warrior. And I want to ask them, what do you mean by that? And it usually comes back to me as I have a different perspective now. And that's not a small thing. It's a better part of wisdom, perspective. So that's what learning life's lessons is about. It is paying attention and recognizing that life is a form of spiritual weight training. You know, if we don't lift any weights, we don't get any stronger. So some people feel bad about having some kind of challenge or adversity. But if we look back on those times we've experienced a difficulty in our life, here we are. You know, the Japanese saying, fall down 6 times, get up 7 times. Point is, every adversity has a hidden gift in terms of most people who've gone through difficulties will recognize they're a little bit wiser now, a little bit stronger now. And that's the value. We don't have to pretend to look for adversity, but when it happens, we can appreciate that element, that's what makes us stronger and that makes us grow those challenges. So learning life's lessons is about all those things. And again, there's a lot in that chapter. It's not just, yeah, we're here to learn from our life experience, because many people don't.
Yeah, that's a good point. I remember reading former President Richard Nixon's book, In the Arena, which was written years ago. It's a great book, by the way. And he just, I mean, that's a man who had some big successes and some spectacular failures, right? He had a roller coaster life. And he talks about how you can't fail if you learn. You've always succeeded in learning something. And, you know, the famous Edison quote, and everybody says it's a different amount of tries, where he failed to invent the light bulb, you know, 25,000, 1,000, who knows? It's been so changed over the years. But I've succeeded in knowing what doesn't work. And Nixon, I remember he quoted Sophocles, and he said, one must wait until evening to see how splendid the day has been. That's not really about learning as much as it's about perspective, but there's some brilliant wisdom there. Yeah, that's great, Dan. Yeah, good. Okay.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
What else? Do you want to go into the next one or more on this?
Well, the career and calling, just so people, your listeners, can understand the picture of the book. Career and calling first defines the difference between career and calling. You know, we're told do what you love and the money will follow. Well, that doing what we love is about following our heart, following our calling. Some people, it's playing the guitar or another musical instrument, or people are called to the clergy or the military. They're hobbies people have. See, calling may or may not have anything to do with money. Calling is something we're just drawn to do in our discretionary time. It's something we find meaningful and enjoyable about it. Whereas a career, whether we call it profession, job, whatever, there are many words, career is about producing an income to support ourselves and family if we have one. And we may like a lot of things about our career. We know the people we work with, we may find it meaningful, but if we weren't getting paid anything, we'd have to find something else. So that's the difference between the two. And it's important for like young artists to understand they're not selling out by getting a day job and then practicing their art in their spare time. Otherwise, it's hard to produce an income. So we need to balance career and calling. Other people devalue anything that doesn't make the money, and they've abandoned a calling that really they enjoyed and might enrich their life. So that's why it's important to understand the difference between the two. And that's why the second purpose in the book is finding our career and calling. And I emphasize self-knowledge, so important. If we don't know ourselves clearly, we end up making the right choices for the wrong person, the one we thought we were. So I go into specifically, what does it mean, self-knowledge? It means understanding what are my talents, what are my interests, and what are my values. And it can take 10 years to get that. You know, that's why they call them the trying 20s, when young people are trying this, trying that, and trying this, because they're exploring themselves and the world. What are my interests? What are my values? They're learning to differentiate between what they think they should do or someone else thinks they should do and what they really want to do. And that can take into the 30s to really discover that. Nobody wants to hear it who's young, but That's why the four purposes of life is especially intended for people going through some kind of transition, graduating from school, retiring, any other changes or dislocations in their life. It's a good time to read it to regain perspective.
Yeah, yeah, it sure is. And that career and calling, it's so important. I mean, we spend a good third of our lives in that, maybe more. And it's just a huge part of our lives. It's like saying, is sleep important? Of course it is. You know, it's a big deal. And so I don't think that should be minimized. Okay.
We learn a lot about ourselves in that search for work. Some people search for a soulmate, others search for a soul job, but really there's a lot in that particular section. Now, we've touched upon the fourth purpose too, which is attending to this present moment. What is my purpose? The third one is the most mysterious and most controversial, and I took a risk even bringing this to the fore in another book called The Life You Were Born to Live. But the third purpose, finding our life path, involves, well, the best way I can put it is to invite your listeners to go to peacefulwarrior.com, click on the life purpose link. It's right there on the left. They will be taken to a life purpose calculator. All they do is put in their day, month, and year of birth, and they will see a number. The number won't mean too much to them, but there's some words associated with each digit. And there's a paragraph about a teaser, a taste, to give them a flavor for their life path. There are 43 different life paths for people born since 1900. And I'll leave it to people to see how accurate the material is. I can't explain how working with the numbers of your date of birth can give valid, reliable, accurate information, but I challenge your listeners just to take a look to get a sample of this material. Or they can get the Life Purpose app online if you have an Android or iPhone. The app is very good. It gives you access to all the information. But it's really helpful.
So you're saying that, I mean, that's about numerology?
Well, again, yeah, about? I don't even use the word because I've never been very interested in numerology. It seemed about 40% accurate, to me at least. I could be wrong about that, but then this unusual mentor showed me an interpretation of the numbers that a bit different from many numerological systems, more simple, straightforward, and I found it just life-changing, actually. So I started working with other people when I went to an advanced training, a series of lectures he gave, and I started working with it. Unlike many people, I was completely immersed in it for about 8 years before I started teaching it and finally wrote a book about it. So it's one aspect of my teaching that I can't see as like
now,
practical.
Yeah, Dan, I mean, you know some people are going to hear you say that and they're going to go, oh my God, isn't that like astrology? Come on.
I know,
seriously.
I know, sure.
Tell us, why do you think it's so credible? I had that analysis done once, you know, my life path number, and I think it was 5 maybe or something like that. And it was uncanny how accurate it was. Like, you know, kind of blew my mind.
Yeah. Well, a good numerologist can do that. Again, it's transrational. I don't want to call it irrational, but I can't explain it. But, you know, you can't explain how aspirin works. Scientists don't know yet exactly all the mechanisms. They just know it has certain results.
I will freely admit and agree with you 100% that there are many things we have yet to understand. And if you want to say, well, you know, these very empirical, scientific, logical people will say, well, you know, I just go with the science. Well, you know, science used to believe in bloodletting and leeches and the world is flat and, you know, the universe revolved around the earth. I mean, science used to believe all sorts of crazy stuff that we don't believe anymore. There's lots of stuff we don't understand. So get over it. That's what I say.
I'm a big fan of science. It pulled us out of the dark ages of superstition, gave us a method to test things empirically. But then, you know, if science becomes a fundamentalist religion, then faith becomes heresy. And I think both are valuable. So I don't want to be out in quote-unquote woo-woo land. I can only say this. I was a psychology major at Berkeley. I understand empiricism, the scientific method. And I'll tell you, I mean, I've studied the various systems, the Enneagram and MMPI and all the different inventories. In terms of self-knowledge, this is one of the most accessible, clear, useful methods I've seen. That's why I chose to share it, and I worked really hard writing that book and the four purposes of life to help give some perspective on these four purposes that can really lend a lot of clarity in people's lives. So that's why.
Okay. Did you finish your thoughts on the purposes? I just want to make sure we got that in.
Yeah, I think I did. I think for a summary, for the time we have, I think that gives people a flavor at least.
And it's great that it's 150 pages, you know, a quicker read. I think a lot of authors are just still stuffing books to make them. I mean, they still think they're selling them by the pound when so many people are buying them digitally anyway. You know? So I like a shorter, concise book. So I think that's great. What else would you like people to know? I mean, your body of work is so extensive. Just anything, you know, about Dan Millman or about your work, The Way of the Peaceful Warrior, which I think is... I mean, you would consider that to be kind of your magnum opus, right?
It's a signature book. It's my best-known book, yes. But each one has had to justify itself and has its own purpose. I would say my background as an athlete and a coach has helped me to stay grounded because it's easy to get lost in abstract concepts. And really, we want something that has actionable things we can do, that has actually outcomes, that is practical and useful. And that's what I try to convey in my various books, and including the four purposes. Mm-hmm.
And do you want to mention anything on the 12 required courses in the School of Life? I mean, you have four purposes, 12 courses.
Sure. I don't really want to overwhelm people, but, you know, it's a fair question. If we're here to learn, what courses are we here to learn? And we think, oh, I'm here to learn about relationships or money or education of the physical body. Those are all useful things, and daily life will deliver lessons in all those areas. But actually, it's deeper than that. It actually summarizes the entire field we call personal growth or personal development. And in these 12 areas, I can fire them off at you really quickly, but basically it's discover your worth. And by the way, it's different from self-esteem, but I can't explain that now. Discover your worth, reclaim your will, energize your body, manage your money, tame your mind, trust your intuition, accept your emotions, face your fears, illuminate your shadow, embrace your sexuality, awaken your heart, and serve your world. And if you can come up with a 13th one, I'd like to hear it. But that really comprises the entire field of personal growth. And I worked very hard to summarize a paragraph to define and clarify what each of these areas are. There's another book I wrote, which is a major book called Everyday Enlightenment, which covers all these in depth, all these 12 areas. But I wanted to summarize it in the four purposes of life.
Yeah, good stuff. Good stuff. Well, Dan, give out your website one more time, if you would, and, you know, tell people they can find the book in all the usual places, I assume, Amazon, et cetera.
Yeah, it's online and in bookstores. And my website is peacefulwarrior.com, and it has a listing and description of all my books, basic various seminars around the world, and there's some online courses as well that are pretty cool, like the Peaceful Warrior Workout.
Excellent. Good stuff. Well, Dan Millman, thank you so much for joining us on the show again. It was great to have you back, and just keep up the good work. Your messages are awesome, and we all need to remember them and be, you know, stay grounded in some of this stuff as we live in this changing, hectic, busy world with information and stimulation overload. There's so much coming at us all the time. So keep up the good work, and thanks again for joining us.
My pleasure, Jason.
Thank you so much for listening. Please be sure to subscribe so that you don't miss any episodes. Be sure to check out the show's specific website and our general website, artmanmedia.com, for appropriate disclaimers and terms of service. Remember that guests' opinions are their own, and if you require specific legal or tax advice, or advice in any other specialized area, please consult an appropriate professional. And we also very much appreciate you reviewing the show. Please go to iTunes or Stitcher Radio or whatever platform you're using and write a review for the show. We would very much appreciate that. And be sure to make it official and subscribe so you do not miss any episodes. We look forward to seeing you on the next episode.